Hello, welcome to the FinTech Scaling Show podcast. If you are like most, you are here because you want to gain insights on how to best scale a business. To achieve optimum scaling, many metrics are important. Sales, leads, cost of customer acquisition, gross revenues. However, as you know, no statistic is as important as profits, both net and gross. For over a decade, your host, Richard Doherty, has helped his clients increase their profits, often turning them into profit-rich winners. To help listeners like you achieve stellar profits in business, Richard has written an ebook entitled Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. It includes profit-making advice from Richard, as well as some of the top guests he's had on the podcast. Just for listening, it is yours free. Simply go to scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. That's scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. Now, over to the show with Richard Doherty, founder and host.
Hey, what's up, everyone? And welcome back to another episode of the FinTech Scaling Show, where we talk to founders, evangelists, and executives and get their insights as to what it takes to scale up their business and also, at the same time, scale up themselves. And today, very lucky to welcome a good friend and a colleague onto the show, Jim Valco. Jim and myself are going to be chatting through my new book, Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. Jim, awesome to have you on the show today and welcome.
Yeah, thank you, Richard. I'm very excited to be here and to find out more about your new book.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. And just to let everyone know, I mean, we're doing a bit of a reverse podcast today. So I'm not going to be the host, which is going to be an experience. Jim's going to take the mic and he's going to lead us through the different parts of the show today. We won't be having a flash run at the end because there's a lot to get through. And I'm sure there'll be a lot of insights that we share along the way. So, you know, I'm going to hand over to Jim and his capable hands and, put you into the hot seat, as I say. There we go, Jim.
Yeah, absolutely. No problem. Well, good. You know, I looked over your book, of course, and what I saw, I loved. And I do have questions about it. A little bit about myself. My background is marketing. I've been in marketing for longer than I care to admit, probably about 30 years. Presently, I'm the CEO of a company called Story World Marketing, and I help different businesses using the elements of story. Anyway, it's very powerful. So that's who I am. But I'm most interested in you, Richard, and your book. And I want to know what prompted you to write it in the first place. It's called Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. So what does that mean? And why did you write it?
But here's the thing. I guess the main emphasis is around the public I serve and the people I work with day in and day out. And I work with budding entrepreneurs, executives, evangelists who have amazing services and amazing products. But, you know, during this process, they are encountering obstacles where in some instances, they are lacking leadership direction or strategy, which is resulting in some of their content that is not really engaging with their public, or they are interacting with customers and prospects, but that interaction is not really impacting the growth of their company. And in some instances, actually, believe it or not, Jim, leaders I come across feel introverted in some forms of communication, which means they're not really sending their message out to their public. And in all honesty, I've been there. I've been in that exact position, and I sympathize with this. Because of that, because I've been in that position in business and in life, right? So, you know, I decided to write a book that shines the light on what I call hidden profit zones. Because once you find these hidden profit zones, you can jump over these obstacles pretty easily. But what are the hidden profit zones? You know, I believe that a zone is any area in your business where you're losing potential revenue, right? And if you isolate that and improve those areas, your profits will increase. And this can involve improvement without necessarily actually increasing the costs in a particular area. Thus, your profits increase and your growth moves forward and you expand to that desired location or the desired place that you want to be as an entrepreneur, as a founder, as an executive?
Yeah, good. For about 15 years, I was the CEO of a nutritional company. And what I've experienced, and what a lot of CEOs and presidents and founders and whatnot experience that I've worked with, is they get stuck on a select few subjects within their business, or they're looking at a few metrics or statistics every week that gets their attention. Definitely wherever the fire is at in the business, that gets their attention. But I was always looking at how many sales we have, gross revenues, the number of leads that come in. And for any owner, profits is the bottom line, right? That's it seems right to me, everything leads to profits, right? So you have all these statistics. But most important for any CEO, it seems to me, at least it was for me, that profits was most important. Is that why you concentrated on that?
So this is the thing, right? So profits is the one stat that shows how good all other parts of your business are actually operating. It's like runs in a baseball team. You hit home runs, you have walks, you have strikeouts, etc., which don't amount to anything if these runs aren't being actually scored, right? The bottom line is, profits are the essential ingredient that allows you to expand, right? And what I do is I start from that, and then I start to work backwards and see exactly what zones need to be optimized in order to increase profits in the various zones within your business.
Yeah. So do you find the CEOs you've worked with, and you've been doing this, I know, for quite a while, right? Yeah. Consulting different businesses, CEOs, that a lot of them sort of have blind spots. Not that they're stupid, not that they're blind, but they're not looking in the right areas.
Yeah. Listen, 100%. I mean, I think blind spots is a good way to describe it, right? So as an example, I was working with a client recently and they had a pricing issue. You know, they were saying to me, Richard, I got a pricing issue. I don't know how to price up a product. I'm going out and I seem to be offering everything for free. So I said, okay, that's interesting. I mean, you know, tell me more. And during the course of a week or two, they started divulging a bit more. And then all of a sudden, they sent me an email. And that email was an email from a potential prospect. And this prospect was asking this person, my client, to come and do some public speaking for them. And the intent of the communication from the prospect was, can you come in for an hour? And we're really going to value this hour from you. So please, can you make this time for us? And in this situation, my client was unaware that it wasn't a pricing issue that was happening here. Although she thought it was a pricing issue, the issue was a communication issue, right? She wasn't able to handle the communication at that specific point in time to direct the prospect to a new way of thinking, right? So I think it's vitally important that in this instance, it's communication. The blind spot was handling a bit of communication, right? And I see these blind spots appear all the time because we are flooded with lots of different types of communication, lots of different types of information. Right. So I think to round up the answer, I think there are blind spots, right? There's blind spots that everyone encounters. There's obstacles that everyone has to jump over. If you're able to handle them straight off the bat, you then can start moving forward and expanding. Even if that moving forward and expanding is a 1% increment closer to your desired location, right?
Mm-hmm. And before you can handle them, you have to see them. Correct.
Exactly. No, 100%. And you really do have to realize that in this instance, it's a communication issue that has to be handled rather than a big lumpy pricing problem that actually sometimes can be quite complex to break down. Handle the communication and then gradiently move towards that maybe larger problem inside your business that allows you to get clarity on how to communicate at different points in an interaction with a prospect.
I want to talk to you about purpose. And I guess we can sort of segue into that with another thing I've found for myself in different companies I've worked with over the years. If the problem isn't solving, they're trying to solve the wrong problem. And I guess that's sort of a cousin to not seeing the problem. They're working on the wrong problem. And I've noticed for myself, I tend to work on the problems that I best understand, that I'm most comfortable with, and ignore the problems that make me uncomfortable. And I think that's very common. And I'd like to segue into the subject of purpose, because it seems to me that has something to do with purpose, as to how big the problems you confront depends on your purpose, doesn't it?
Well, here's the thing, right? So purpose, I always start any client engagement with a simple question. Talk to me about your purpose. And it's an open-ended question, because I want to really understand what drives this executive, this founder, this entrepreneur, et cetera. And interesting answers come out. But one thing that resonates with me is, if an individual has a clear purpose, then no matter whether the economy is booming or going through a dip, that purpose will guide them to the place that they want to go, right? And I'll give you an example of that. And it's not a business example. It's actually a life example. I grew up in South Africa during a massive transition in the country. We are moving from a state where people were locked away for their beliefs to a nation where we all wanted to be free and united. And the leader in that movement was Nelson Mandela, who got free from prison in 1992. And his purpose was very, very clear. He wanted to unite all South Africans so each individual could have the opportunity to live the life that they wanted to live. Okay? So a very strong and very clear, very powerful purpose. But he didn't stop there, right? He didn't just say that. He went out and he actioned it. And how did he action it? You know, he went out and he was on the field in 1995 to give Francois Pienaar, a white South African, a rugby trophy, the Rugby World Cup final trophy. And we beat the All Blacks, which is good. But that united a divided nation, right? Why? Because his purpose was to unite each and every individual. He didn't stop there. He went out to and handed the African Nations Cup trophy in 1998 to a Zulu player. And in so doing, united fractions of different cultures within inside the African, within inside South Africa, right? And he didn't stop there. He continued. He went out to schools and he spoke to the girls and boys and started showing them that uniting and being together is better than being separate, right? Let's be a team. Let's go out there. Let's win together. If he didn't have a strong purpose and a clear purpose, would have any of this been possible? You know, I know the answer to that, and I'm sure everyone else knows the answer to that. There's a case in point in many different places around the world where changes like this sometimes lead to civil war. But in the case of South Africa, it led to a young democracy, which is to today still producing some really great leaders and also some really great businesses. So yeah, purpose is pivotal to not only a founder or an entrepreneur, but an individual, because then you can start living the life that you want to live, right?
Yeah, and I wrote down while you were talking, strong and clear purpose communicated and then followed up with action, right? Those seems to be the key elements here, because it's easy to have a strong purpose, but I think you really need to clarify it. If you have a team, super clarify it and inspire your team. Do you help companies do that?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you have to have a purpose is a statement. And the question is, how do we action that, right? So in Mandela's case, I've already walked through the example. In my client's case, I mean, last week or the week before, been working with an entrepreneur founder where their purpose was very, very unclear. They had a great business. They were generating some really decent revenue, but they didn't know where to take it. So I asked that question, tell me about your purpose. And the purpose was unclear. So we dug in a bit deeper and we got some clarity on that purpose. Then we did a bit more than that. We didn't just stop there. We dug down one layer below. I said to her, cool, we got a purpose now, but to actually get this into your business, what we need to do is we need to productize this purpose, create a product out of it so we can start inserting it into the fabric and the departments of your business. And once we do that, we can actually start running stats and seeing whether this purpose is actually starting to become a reality, or whether we need to tweak certain things in your business to make certain that we do make this purpose a reality. And what I like to call a valuable final product. We have to have a valuable final product in our business that tells us exactly where we're going. And then underneath that, in each and every department, we have sub-products or sub-departments that allow us to get towards that ultimate goal, whether it's us selling stuff or whether it's us creating a new product or a different product or engaging with a new type of client. These are all components that will allow us to reach our ultimate valuable final product and then ultimately deliver a purpose against that. And then just to round it off, you know, we need to look at the stats. As I said, we need to look at the stats on a week-on-week basis to see what's going right and what's not going right, and tweak what's obviously not going right so we can continue moving forward rather than worry about all the shit that might not happen, right?
I totally got you. As you were talking, two things came to mind that are in your book, which I know you're allowing people to download it for free. So I really suggest anybody listening does do that. It's an excellent book. But the two things that came to mind, I think you cited a survey that was done after the last 2 years of COVID. And people, employees, and people in general are looking to join companies that are more purpose motivated and align more with their individual purposes than even 2 years ago before COVID. And it seems to me that people are realizing, I don't know, life is a little more valuable now. What we do is important. Our purpose is important. So that it seems very timely right now that every CEO should be keyed in on that idea of purpose.
Yeah, and I think every CEO, every employee as well, every individual, I think it goes broader than the executive office. What we want to make certain as executives, as CEOs, is that the people that we get into our business, the team that we build, are also purpose-driven. And their purpose aligns ultimately to the purpose that we are going off to achieve, right? Because then one thing is going to happen here, right? We're going to build a team that is going to be retained for a long period of time. And we're going to build a team that wants to come to work and wants to put in that extra yard of effort to achieve the stuff that we as a unit want to actually achieve. So yeah, I think it goes a bit broader than the CEO office. And I think that's where we are right now. And I think it's a really cool place to be, because why wouldn't you want to get a team that is fully purpose-driven and fully purpose-driven towards a mission, and a mission that is achievable? And it's achievable because that team that you have is going to be there, you know, sort of throughout that journey.
Want to increase the profits in your business? Download Richard's ebook right now, Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. It will help you find new ways to increase your profits. Best of all, it's free. Go to scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. That's scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up.
You gave an example in your book of I guess you could call it a study that was done, two groups of salespeople. And these two groups were selling their product, their service, and making X amount of money in sales every week, every month. And then they had one group change. They just had them articulate their purpose, and they gave this group a new purpose, a sort of lofty purpose, this group A, we'll call it. And they didn't do it to group B. And then a month went by and group A's sales far exceeded group B. And the only thing that changed, only thing, was the purpose of what they were doing, why they were trying to get sales. And I thought that was fascinating, number one. And I thought, well, that's what I've seen in businesses as well. Just when you change the purpose.
Exactly. We looked at a business. In the book, we talk about business. We've also spoken about individuals now and CEOs in the executive office around purpose. And we took a look at purpose, and I discussed stuff around Mandela and his purpose. I mean, purpose is something that, if done correctly, can really shift the paradigm and allow you as an individual, as an executive, as a founder, as an evangelist, really sort of expand not only your business, but also expand your horizons as an individual, because it's something that is pretty easy to translate into day-to-day living, right? It's something that you can take with you. It becomes a habit. Yeah, I want to create a business that is revenue generating. I want to create a business that has a great team, has a great philosophy, has a great culture. These things drive you, and it will drive the way that not only you as an executive or as a founder interact on a day in, day out basis, but also your team interact on a day in, day out basis.
Another concept in the book I thought was really great was that the words that you used were care, sell.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we're talking about sales in general right now. So can you explain that a little bit?
Sales is interesting. It's an interesting topic, very interesting topic. And I encounter so many different viewpoints on sales and salesmen or saleswomen. And I think there's a bit of a stigma attached to this. So I myself have been through the rodeo show when it comes to figuring out exactly what it takes to sell, right? But during this process, what I've found is there's certain definitions that you have to be aware of as an executive, as a salesman, as a CEO. And if you're aware of these definitions, you can actually start enjoying selling, right? One definition is the term crush sell. Well, what is crush sell? Crush sell is pushing, pulverizing, and not caring, just trying to sell, get it out there. What is soft sell? Soft sell is a total opposite. It's the action of vaguely wandering around and talking about one's product or service in a manner that actually confuses you and the person that you're talking to. And what's the definition of care sell? Well, care sell means an insistence that people buy, right? You're caring about the person and not being reasonable with the stops and barriers in getting them fully paid up to a product or service that will actually help them. You're caring for that individual. And what is the actual definition of selling from the Oxford Dictionary? It's the act of assisting, inducing, or being responsible for a person buying a product or service or an idea. And that sounds kind of cool, right? You know, you are someone that is caring. You are someone that is taking responsibility for your prospect. And you taking your prospect to a space where they need to be. So I think we got to recognize that as executive CEOs and salesmen and remove the stigma around sales and just start enjoying it and start enjoying taking that responsibility for a prospect, because that's what it's about. And that's what care sounds about.
I love it. And obviously that ties into your purpose. Obviously, if your purpose, if you really do care and you really do want to get this person in a better place. But that's wonderful. But what strikes me is that's something you can't fake, right? It's you can't pretend to care, because they will know. You truly have to care, right?
You do. And again, it's an interesting one, because you have to, caring takes ownership, right? So it's interesting. Again, it's a care sell. Okay, you have to care. You have to take responsibility. A lot of times in sales, I feel that as a seller, there's a feeling you aren't in control. You aren't the one taking responsibility. It's the person on the other side that has to say yes or no. And actually, I'll say that it's a total opposite. You are the one that says yes or no. And once you realize that, then it becomes a bit easier. The game becomes a bit easier, right? If you're sat in front of someone and that person has zero interest in what you're saying, why would you want to onboard this person as a customer? Because you know what? If that person says yes for whatever reason, they're likely to be a bit of a handful. So you take control of the situation, kick them out. You don't want to engage with people like that. You want people to come into your business that are actually going to be of value to your business and your brand and your service, your product, right? So there's elements of control here. And there's an element of making certain that you qualify your prospects as they come into your pipeline. And in doing this, actually, you're caring for them, because you're not wasting their time, you're not wasting your time. And then you onboarding the person that is going to get full value of what you can offer in either your product and your service.
With my company, Story World Marketing, we've kind of isolated, well, not kind of, we have isolated about 10 different elements of story. These are elements that storytellers use, that movie makers use to create a good story, a good movie. When you go to a movie, you are engaged to the degree that you are feeling some sort of emotion. You're angry, you're scared, you're sad, whatever. And that's what movies do. They evoke emotions. And we try to teach companies how to evoke emotions within their companies. So they're not just telling a story, but they're being the story. So the company's sort of being a story. So I have a question for you. One thing I talk to owners and CEOs and a lot of people about is one element of a story is every story has to have an antagonist, a villain, right?
Yeah.
So every movie has a villain, right? Somebody for you to dislike, somebody for you to want to be killed or whatever. And I tell business owners, who's your antagonist? What are you fighting against, right? Every business has their product and the product has benefits and they're fighting, you know, they're trying to sell the benefits of the product. But who are you fighting against? Every business needs an antagonist, a villain. So my question, and I might catch you off guard here, for you, for Scale Up Consulting, do you have a villain, so to speak, that you're fighting against? And this is the purpose of why you are existing, to defeat that villain so that your clients can win. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. And I think, let me answer it this way. My sole mission in all of this is to put the time and effort in to train founders and executives so they can maximize their leadership, relationship, and communication abilities so they can then unlock their hidden profit zones within their business, which is then going to result in a dedicated audience of followers, which then leads to more leads, profits, and revenues, right? So the villain in this case, I would say, is one of leadership, one of communication, one of relationships, and one of connectiveness. Because nowadays, it's not enough to simply get out there, create a product or a service, and go into LinkedIn and say, hey, listen, I'm here. You have to lead your followers. You have to lead your public. You have to create the relationships to lead that public to a certain destination. And you have to be able to have the skills and the ability to consistently communicate to them, right? And as SMEs, that I know a lot of founders and entrepreneurs and executives come from, they got very good detailed understanding in their world. They lack the nuances and the abilities to really communicate effectively to their public, which then allows their public to move that 1%. That 1% could be a small 1% through listening to a podcast such as this, or it could be a larger 10% where they, you know, buy a product or and or a service from myself or from whoever it is, right? So I think that's it. I think those are the things. If we are able to have the ability to lead, communicate, and build those relationships, then we are able to get to a place where we can do pretty much what we desire and what we want to desire.
Yes. So putting it in the terms that I spoke of, antagonist or the villain.
Yeah.
It's almost like you're saying, just if we take one of those, the ability to communicate. Earlier you said sometimes you deal with people and they're sort of introverted.
Exactly.
So that's sort of the enemy, right? In a sense, that would be the villain, so to speak, whatever this introversion is. And you or your client, the hero of the story, overcomes the introversion and communicates well to their audience. Putting it in story terms, that's sort of what I'm doing here.
Yeah, I totally hear. I totally hear what you're saying. So yes, I mean, to answer your question, 100%, right? So, you know, there's obstacles. I mean, we chatted about this early on. There's obstacles that these folk have to overcome. You know, one is introversion, communication. The other is making certain that you're not wasting time, money, or effort in speaking to the wrong prospects. The other is making certain you aren't lacking the leadership direction or strategy that results in your content not engaging with the right people, right? So in each instance, you as a leader need to step up to the plate, right? And confront that obstacle or villain in the way. And I don't want to say slay it, but, you know, get the knowledge that allows you to overcome that point or that obstacle, right? And in so doing, what you're able to do then is, you know, build those relationships. You're able to lead that team or lead that public. And you're then able to, as I said, you're then able to also communicate on a consistent basis because you know exactly what it takes to communicate, whether to an audience or internally to your team.
You've interviewed many people over the last couple of years, and you're in this unique position of talking to business owners and business people all the time. Has there been one particular thing that has come up again and again that you've noticed, the one common denominator that maybe resonates with your audience also, that business people need to be better at in general?
So right now, I think the world is moving. The world is shifted dramatically over the last 2 years. But even before that, there were shifts in the way we did stuff with the, you know, sort of the uprise of the internet and then social platforms. We are all acting and working and living differently, right? So now more than ever, there's a need to be connected because we've moved from the information age to the age of connectiveness. So a common denominator across everyone that I speak to is the need and the want to be not only connected to their customer, but also their public on an ongoing basis, right? And in order to do that, you need to be able to develop the skills that are required at an executive level to, I guess, connect on a consistent basis with the public, right? So I think it's not just a matter of going on LinkedIn or going on Facebook. That's, you know, part of it. But it's also making certain that you have the right public speaking ability. You also are able to manage a Zoom sales call. You are able to digitally move from an office-based environment to a virtual-based environment, both on the customer side of things and also on the team side of things. So all of this circulates around being connected in some way, shape, or form on virtual platforms and virtual conferences. So yeah, I think that's the one thing that resonates. And that's the one thing that a lot of my guests and even my clients right now are concentrating on and making a concerted effort to upskill in areas that allow them to be more connected to the market and their public.
Totally makes sense. And I got that out of your book. And one thing I was a little, well, not surprised, but one thing that came up in your book a few times was some of the people you interviewed were interested in what you just said, especially regarding their own team. It depends on what sort of business you have and how many teammates, employees you have. But the word love came up a fair amount of time, connecting the way that you just described it came up. And I just read a large survey just the other day asking business owners and CEOs, et cetera, what their biggest challenge was today in business. And the thing that came up was finding and holding on to good talent, employees. And I wanted to get your take on that because it seems to me that, okay, finding good talent, yeah, that's one thing. But holding on to good talent has a lot to do with what you just talked about, that ability to communicate, the ability to, for lack of a better word, love your staff and share the same purpose. What are your thoughts on that?
It's a very interesting question. And I'll take this view, right? There's constant murmurings in the market or in the public around this lack of talent or this war on talent. And, you know, we can't find the right person because of X, Y, Z, or, you know, London or New York or these places are so expensive because, you know, the talent is all there. So Interesting. Very interesting. I think, firstly, talent is everywhere. You've got to be able to find it. But maybe finding talents these days is different than it was even 2 years ago, maybe even 5 years ago, even 10 years ago. Using the systems that were in place, i.e. through recruitment agencies, etc., I think are now archaic, right? If I'm really honest with you, I believe that as a brand, as a business, you need to do better than that. And you need to, just as you create demand for your product, you need to create demand for talent. They coined this term demand generation in sales and in marketing and in the business development world. And I think it's the same thing in the talent world. You need to create a demand generation engine that allows you to bring in or have the option of bringing in the best talent for your particular product and or service. So what does that look like, right? Maybe there is a case in point of setting up a podcast, writing certain blogs, doing things outside of your initial comfort zone and also your initial product and or service offering that starts impinging on the talent pool that you need to be talking to, right? And then once you start getting that demand flow working and you start building out your team, I believe it's going to be a bit easier for you to retain talent. Why? Because firstly, these people are coming into you, so they want to work with you and for you. And then they're going to be aligned to what it is you are trying to do. So actually, the problem of retaining talent becomes less of an issue, right? Because they're in it because they love it. And back to purpose. You're in it because you're driving towards a purpose. These folk are going to be in it because they love it. They have the same purpose. They want to be on the journey. So, yeah, I definitely believe that talent is a big topic, but you need to approach it in a slightly different way nowadays.
It seems to me the ability to inspire people, to move them into action, to strike different emotional chords in them is what you're saying, really.
Exactly. And why wouldn't you? I mean, wouldn't it be better for people to come knocking on your door and say, listen, I saw your podcast. I know you are hiring and I'd really love to join your crew because I love your mission, rather than the other way around of writing up a job spec and the job spec says you have to have an MBA, you have to have certain grades in school, you have to speak 5 different languages. And all of a sudden, you're narrowing down the bucket. But is that narrowing down the correct way to do it? I'll let you answer that. But I think we want to get talent into our companies that love what we do, have the same purpose, and are aligned to our vision. And then, you know, as I said, the retention question becomes a bit of a question that is not really discussed. And actually, I'll say this: the retention question becomes one that's flipped on the head. My friend Tom van der Loop has a retention problem. But the retention problem is most probably the best retention problem in the world to have. They ask this simple question now over the last, in December last year, they asked this question at the executive meeting. How do we make certain that our team of 50, growing to maybe 60 in the next year or so, stays with us forever? Brilliant question to ask. Why? Yeah. Because he's in a position to ask that because he started at purpose. He created demand for the way and style in which they work. And the people that come in to his business love what they do, love their team, on control and have full responsibility and autonomy as to what it takes to be a great employee there. So the next logical step is let's retain the talent forever. And that's the question we should all strive for.
That's great. And, you know, we're in very interesting times because the world is getting more and more technical, meaning technology, right? And I work with a fair amount of people in tech, high tech, fintech. And you find people in those industries, a lot of them are, gosh, nowadays, if they're young, they're brought up on a computer. And they sort of, yeah. I hate to say it, but a lot of them are sort of missing these, very much missing these skills you're talking about in order to succeed on a high level. So especially the tech industries, I find, and most of the guys I talk to, they know it. They know that their communication skills need work because their head's in a computer all the time.
Yeah.
So I imagine you help a fair amount of people in those areas. Am I right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, we've got what I like to call the LRC triangle, you know, leadership, relationships, and communication, right? If you get all three of these working in unison, you are going to expand. And 100% guaranteed you expand towards your desired location. If one of them is out of sync, let's say communication, then it's going to be a bit difficult, right? You're not going to be able to handle certain situations. You're not going to be able to go out there and promote. And by the way, promote is not a bad word. Promote is a good thing. You're not going to be able to go out there and promote your product and or service because you're not going to be able to understand exactly what it takes to do that. So, and along the way, obviously, you need to be able to build those relationships. And those relationships go broader and deeper than customer relationships. You've got to realize that. They might be investor relationships. They might be potential employees at a certain point in time, vendor relationships. All these little parts, once packaged together and put together, will allow you to incrementally move towards your desired scene, whatever that desired scene is.
So if someone comes to you and they do have a lack of communication skills to some degree, how do you handle that? I mean, you can put the nuts and bolts there. You can say do social media and you can say do a webinar, but if they're just not good at communicating, and I know a lot of CEOs that aren't that good at communicating, to be honest with you, they certainly don't inspire people much. That seems like a mental thing almost. How do you deal? How do you help that?
So interesting, right? So out here in the UK, we play football, not American football, but soccer. Yeah, soccer out in the States, right? And there's this one player called Raheem Sterling. Raheem Sterling is an England international, very good player. He used to play for Liverpool, but now plays for Man City. And these guys obviously are, you know, the best team in England, if not Europe at this point in time. And he had an issue. His big issue was he wasn't able to score goals. He was a forward, but he wasn't able to score goals. Crazy to think about it, but he just was not able to score any goals. Pep Guardiola, the best coach in the world, comes in and helps him, coaches him, you know, coaches him on how to score goals. Crazy as it may sound, he went off and he did drills day in, day out with a team of experts, and he honed his skills. He honed his goal scoring skills. And it's exactly the same in executive coaching for communication. What I do is I'd bring you into the locker room sometimes because the locker room is a nice place to hang out. And we hone your skills. We drill the skills that are required to get you to a level that allows you to get your message out to your public, right? And repetition is the way that I do it. Week in, week out, we repeat a skill. We hone it, and then we go off into maybe a platform such as LinkedIn. Maybe not. Maybe it's into a webinar. Maybe it's in email communication. Communication is all through business. It's not just sitting on social media, right? But we hone those skills. We figure out how to handle situations and we drill it week in, week out, day in, day out. Just as a footballer drills their skills, we do exactly the same.
Well, you certainly are a good representation of communication yourself. So excellent, excellent. So if somebody wants to get your book, Unlock Hidden Profit Zones, what do they do?
Listen, I think the best and the easiest way to get a copy is jump onto my website, www.scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign/up. And there's a little video there, and there's a form to fill out. It's a pretty easy form. You fill in your details and automatically you'll get a copy. And yeah, that's the easiest way to do it. I think easiest and best way to do it.
Excellent. Well, you know, thank you for letting me ask you questions on your podcast. I thoroughly enjoyed it and I thoroughly enjoyed the answers, and I learned a few things myself. So thank you very much, Richard.
Jim, it's been a pleasure, and it's been awesome. I've enjoyed the conversation, and I've enjoyed being in the in the other seat for once. So yeah, it's been awesome. And listen, all the work that we're doing together, I love it, and really enjoyed today's conversation.
Likewise. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the FinTech Scaling Show podcast. Please take advantage of the free gift Richard has waiting for you. It's his new ebook, Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. Simply go to scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. That's scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up.